I'm competing with Stephen Colbert, who puts out 5 videos a day, who has a team of 40, and there's just one of me.
I just want to sell some carpet.
People have to really understand the difference between passion and talent. You can have a passion for music. It doesn't mean your talent is in singing.
Welcome to Tagline. Pour a cocktail and join us for inspired conversations with the best storytellers, culture makers, and creators.
You try it, you nail it, you scale it. You try it, you nail it, you scale it.
Tagline is produced by iHeartRadio in partnership with Advertising Age.
Hi, I'm Gail Troverman. I'm the CMO at iHeartMedia. Welcome, everyone, to episode 8 of Tagline. We're here today with some awesome folks assembled here in Burbank. We are going to talk a little bit about creativity. We're going to talk a little bit about engineering creativity, what it means today in this era of technology and new and next and fast moving and fast changing. And we've got an awesome panel of diverse experts in all things creativity. We've got Andrew Robertson, CEO of BBDO. Andrew manages The Network, which has won more effectiveness and more creative awards than anyone else. Pretty impressive. Yes.
Yeah, you didn't know, did you?
Yeah, who's counting, really?
And he carries a big stick.
Says the client. Yeah. Yes. We also have the amazing Val Vargas here with us. She's SVP, Advertising and Creator Lab at AT&T. And Val is going to talk to us a little bit about the intersection of technology, creativity, and media.
You betcha.
And we've got two amazing creators with us today. Alexis G. Zoll. You'll have to ask her what the G is for. Alexis has a huge social media following, more than 1 million YouTube followers. She's starring in her Zoll Good full screen show, and she's crossing over in traditional media with an FX show, and she's been on Netflix, and you should check out her content. It's pretty amazing. And we also have the fabulous Shannon Boodram, Shan Booty, as she is known to many of you on the internet. Shan is a sex and love expert, so we'll see where we go with that in this episode of Tagline. She's got a book called Laid that was obviously a bestseller. The title alone should sell it. And she's worked as a sexual educator on a bunch of TV and radio shows. And she also has a show called Your Perfect Date, which is in season 2, now streaming on full screen. So pretty impressive group we have assembled here. And the reason we're here in Burbank today is there's an interesting conference just down the block here happening. It's the AT&T Shape Conference. Val, can you tell us a little bit about what the Shape Conference is and why you traveled here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Shape is about shaping the future. It is the crossover of media, tech, and entertainment. There are some amazing things going on across the street. There is a hackathon, which is mixed reality, virtual reality, augmented reality. Folks over the course of the weekend are actually generating new apps, new capabilities through, you know, 24, 48 hours that will be up for competition. There's also a create-a-thon going on. So there's live filming happening on the back lot. The short series will then be debuted this evening. And there's also pre-submitted entertainment projects from up-and-coming filmmakers that are in contest for over the weekend. But I have to say the best thing about Shape is it's all about uncommon collaboration. Just who you're mingling with, who you sit down next to, you end up having a conversation that starts to cross over a space that you might have interest in and something that someone else does. So it's about getting the community together and having those conversations.
Amazing. So you're actually like creating programming that you're going to put out into the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing. Terrifying as a marketer. Does that scare you?
Does it scare me?
Yeah.
No, it excites me.
I think it's
fantastic.
I think one of the things that's kind of fascinating in when you talk about creativity and sort of this intersection of technology and creativity today is the openness of and the accessibility of distribution, right? How did you guys get started and build an audience of millions of followers?
I was 13 years old. I had been a competitive gymnast my entire life, and I had a really bad injury, so I couldn't do gymnastics anymore. So I took an acting class, and through that acting class, I like found YouTube, and I watched tons of YouTube videos, and I started making videos myself. And for 2 years, I built up 500 subscribers. Like, that's it. Like, no K. Like, just 500 of my closest pals. And then I met this YouTuber named Lisa Schwartz at a party. And I went up to her and we were talking. I was like, I really like your videos. And I gave her my business card. And she
First
went home.
Of all, you had a business card? How old?
I was 15 and like probably annoying. Wow. Like I was like, hello, it's me. And here's my business card.
Apparently it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've told people that story and they're like, wasn't that super annoying? And I was like, probably, but so far so good. Like I'll take it. And then she gave me a shout out on her channel and I started working with her. I started making videos on Shane Dawson's second channel.
I had a similar story to you. I was doing track and field. I was away on a scholarship there. And while I was away in school, I just heard so many stories from young women about sex, love, and relationships that they were struggling with. And I was like, wow, there is nobody who is of this new generation of the easy access culture with the world at your fingertips that's really talking about this change and how to navigate through this change. So I enrolled in journalism school. I began writing my book, Laid. And I basically worked as a traditional sexual educator. I graduated from school for journalism. I worked as a sex education counselor.
Non-traditional.
I'm non-traditional now, I think. I did work at a university for a few years. And then after that, I was just writing articles. And I moved out to LA and I shot 4 pilots for traditional media. Mm-hmm. And after the 4th one, which was an amazing concept about a show where couples struggle with fidelity via social media. And I'm like, this is going to go. It's so timely. It's so relevant. And I had all my eggs in that basket and it didn't get picked up. And I was like, how about YouTube? You know, a place where I can go, where the content that I make gets seen by more than 10 people I never get to meet, who apparently don't like me very much. So I just decided at that point to take it into my own hands and to create content. That was in 2015. And everything has just gone up since then. It's a challenging space for sure, because you're program director, marketer, content creator, advertiser, worst critic, and best friend. But it's fun.
That's a great way to put it. The most challenging thing about online is how all of those things exist 80% in your head. And so a lot of what you're keeping track of and what you're doing and what you're programming just is you thinking all the time with yourself.
How do you guys think about collaborating? I know you're both doing lots of interesting work where you're collaborating with folks like Alexis and other creators like Shannon. How do you think about that world where collaboration is the key versus the world of control and perfection that we used to live in?
Yeah. As a brand, we are the first ones to say we can't dream this all up inside. And our best opportunity is when we collaborate with others. It's why we have a deep relationship with Fullscreen, where we work with very talented creators like the lovely two ladies here in dreaming up things that not only AT&T might be interested in participating in, but actually collaborating together so that we design programming that the creator wants to get to market, and finding ways to naturally integrate the AT&T brand and experience and products and services into those stories. Because the day of the logo slap,
yes,
or sponsored by or powered by, are quickly falling away. And finding ways to naturally tell the story, one that a creator wants to do that can reach their millions of followers, is a really nice point where the two can come together.
Andrew, how do you feel about that as the agency that has been in the business of perfecting creative and delivering and having control over clients like AT&T? Is it changing your world?
Yeah, of course. As long as you never lose sight of two things, you can navigate your way through this. The first two things, or those two things, are firstly that you really have to believe and focus on the consumer. And whatever they are doing, whatever is motivating them, interesting them, wherever they're spending their time, that's where you need to be. If you just do that, you'll be okay.
And you'll win awards.
If you forget that, you'll go mad. And the second thing is, we're here to sell stuff. I am. That's what I do.
Yeah, I'm proud of that too. I like capitalism. I like marketing.
We have to develop ever different techniques for doing it. If you lose sight of that and think that all we're here to do is create more content and add more bricks to the pile, we're not serving anybody.
And I would stretch that a bit in that from a brand perspective, it's absolutely the consumer. You have to start with that in the center. In much of what we do around branded content, I'd call that the fan, right? But the other piece for us that's important is that the creator is at that center. Because if we're not designing things that are interesting to you to do, then it doesn't work, right? So I would put that creator and fan at the center.
Yeah, it feels like in the advertising world today, like we've really broken down a ton of those walls, right? You used to brief someone and they'd go into like some secret dark rooms that you were never allowed in and you just hope like genius would come out of it. And now it feels like there's a much more sort of open collaborative process for actually bringing stories and ideas to life.
It's not an either or, it's an and.
A little bit of both.
I mean, both of those things are happening.
Still some dark rooms in the office.
There's still some dark rooms where angry people throw pencils at each other. Yeah.
But I love when they come out of that dark room and there's something magical. I'm there all day, every day.
The dark ad web.
I'll take that.
How do you guys like, as creators, collaborating with brands? Have you had experiences where you've worked with clients, advertisers, brands, good or bad?
Sure. I've had a lot of different experiences working with brands, and I feel like every time I've collaborated with a brand, whether it's on a YouTube video or even like an Instagram post or a tweet, it's such a different experience because each brand like values different things and each has like, these are the words that we value within our company. And personally, I feel like the more a brand trusts the creator, like I know my audience and I know what I can make that will get a certain reaction from them. And so if you tell me what you want from the
what the
brand.
Goal is,
yeah, what
right?
the goal
versus,
is, I
yeah.
can really collaborate.
How to do it, just tell me and what the end game is.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. What do you want out of the experience? What do you want for the fans to take away from it? And then the more you can work together to create a narrative that works both for me as a storyteller and for the brand to get their message across, the more fun everyone has. And I personally feel like the more effective a campaign is.
Mm-hmm. So was the Jell-O bath episode paid or not?
It was not. Okay. But if Jell-O is interested, I'll take a second Jell-O bath. Sure. Had a good time the first time.
I figured it probably wasn't when you did the lines of Jell-O. I was pretty sure that probably wasn't a paid endorsement.
Yeah.
That's literally a childhood
pretty
fantasy of mine, though, to be in a Jell-O bath. I've got to. That sounds so sad.
Yeah, that might be the intersection of your topics right there.
Yes. I really like when brands allow me to give my audience an experience that I couldn't. Mm. So whether that is like a weekend getaway somewhere where you guys get to connect or see each other, or getting to do a brand deal with a company where it's like you guys go and have a girl's day, a spa day. Even if it's watching you do something that you wouldn't ordinarily get to do, which is what I love about my full screen show, which is not a brand deal, but a brand deal. But in essence, it is allowing
not
me to
yet.
Make content.
This is your chance. You know? Go ahead, pitch.
It's allowing me to make the kind of content that maybe I couldn't do on my own. So to bring a greater experience and then bring my brand to it, but at a heightened level, I think that's when it works really, really well. When not only does your pockets get fatter, but you make the experience richer for your consumer.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Watching a couple of your episodes, I was like, what would it be like to sponsor a date? That's a really interesting creative brief, right?
This makeout session is sponsored to you by...
Yeah, it works pretty well on The Bachelorette. So there's something there. Yeah. So we're talking a little bit about spontaneity. Everyone can just sort of be posting and creating and at this insane speed. Do you think we're losing the craft? Mark Pritchard, I think, had been quoted a bunch this year talking about the crap trap of advertising. Do you think that's a risk for us today? Or how do we mitigate?
It definitely is a risk. Mm-hmm. We have to add to the world, not just pollute it. The great joy of everything that's happened technologically is it has enabled people who have creative talent, who have now a voice, not just to produce stuff, but to put stuff out in front of people and build an audience that they understand and can keep serving. The flip side of that is for every two of these, there are 25,000 who are just adding to the pile. It's not a problem because it's very Darwinian. Only the best survives. So in that sense, we don't need to worry about it. But I think for advertisers and marketers to rush to produce stuff is a mistake. Just concentrate on producing something that's really good and increases the chances of being chosen and picked up by consumers. It should be the goal.
And I do think the days of having three networks with a limited set of content that doesn't necessarily appeal to smaller niches of the marketplace. Right. Today, the ubiquity of the tech available enables audiences to see themselves in messaging and creative moments. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
There's fewer gatekeepers today.
Right.
And there's more, you know, like you're doing with AT&T and Fullscreen and YouTube. And there's so many more enablers, which is an interesting moment. There's still a lot of content getting created.
But if it's crap content, use
true.
Your word.
True.
It disappears. It won't get watched, right?
Do you feel a responsibility, all of you as creators, as people putting messages out into the world? I think, Andrew, you were hitting on it. Doing messaging and marketing that matters. Is that a new responsibility we all have in this era?
I don't think of it as a new responsibility. I think it's always been one. I think we just have more opportunities to do it in different ways, as Val was talking about. You don't have to bet the farm on 30 seconds that's going to appear on three networks in front of 60% of the population.
And you appeal can experiment and get through to everyone all at once.
You can build it up through 20 audiences of 1 million rather than depending on one of 20.
Yeah, you did some pretty amazing work together with the It Can Wait campaign, taking on societal issues. Was that controversial internally?
So the notion of It Can Wait, or no texting while driving, is obviously of critical importance to a company like ours. And I applaud AT&T for several years ago taking a stand on a product that we sell in the marketplace.
Yeah, I can imagine there was a lot of debate
when not to use it. But the real applause goes to BBDO and the work that they did around several campaigns over the course of the time that this has been an initiative of ours. Just beautiful creative work that taps into the oxytocin of the brain, Andrew.
Yep.
That really, yes, stimulates the mind and really makes you question whether or not you'll text and drive.
I'm staggered when I watch Instagram stories or snaps just how many people are posting videos while they're driving.
While driving.
This has moved beyond texting now. This is a combination of James Corden and Easy Film app. I'm really horrified by that. We got to work on that.
It's true. I mean, you guys won a bunch of awards this year in Cannes. Congratulations for Meet Graham. That was also a pretty provocative, spectacular campaign. Once you see it, you can't get that out of your head, with a similar mission, keeping us safe in the cars.
Yeah.
You know, I know at iHeart, we've seen like phenomenal ratings lifts because when you're in your car, there's actually a live medium. So you might listen to a playlist or your favorite music and then you go, I'm disconnected. Oh my God. And that urge to text and drive can be mitigated with actually listening to live humans and being part of a live in the moment conversation.
I think I'm right in saying that all the data on Facebook is that live video is watched much more, even when it's watched later.
Later, yeah, yeah. There's something, non-live. All the briefs that we see from marketers, live media, and you know, whether it's on Facebook or ABC, or there's something about the humanity and the authenticity, the unscripted. It's why podcasts are having such a hot moment right now, right? The ability to just have a conversation and be part of it without it being scripted and perfected, right? That kind of content is more what you watch alone, scripted narrative content. And I think there's something about social content that's very live and in the moment. Do you guys do much live media, or are you doing mostly edited?
I mean, I think I've had to make a big change this year in terms of what I enjoy consuming and what works. I recently started doing commentary on pop culture and how it relates to sex, love, and relationships. And I would never dream of doing those things before. But now I'm like, I have to meet people where they are. Live is a big part of that because I was never part of the reality TV show phenomenon, obsessionist era. I've never really been a Bachelor watcher. I do like well thought out, slower content. But as the current tends to shift, like, yes, you do. And Instagram, for example, when you post a live video and you save it, it shows up at the top of people's feeds whenever they open their app. So you'd be a fool not to take advantage of that, even though I just would never sit and watch someone be like, so I'm brushing my teeth today. But it's what people do enjoy doing. And that's a part of, I guess, the role that we have of constantly changing with the culture. And because you are one person, you know, you don't have one person who doesn't mind doing live and one person who doesn't. You have to be all things to all people. And it can be exhausting, but I guess it's not that much to ask, really.
Yeah, I think we all need part that is carefully curated and part that's totally ephemeral. The easier it is for those things to be accessed, the more of it we're going to do.
Right. I think with every addition into social media, whether it's more prominent live videos, you can, like you're saying, meet it in the middle. I have gone on Instagram Live and I was cutting my friend's hair. And so I think it's finding ways to make the content that you still think is funny or that you still enjoy or still is a part of your brand, but using these new tools and resources in really what can ultimately be such a positive way.
Was it a good haircut?
Yes, it was. Really? It worked out really well. Okay. Yeah.
Good. Well, it's good to have fallback options. I don't think you're going to need them. Always good. What about technology? How is technology changing what you're doing?
I just always try and keep a very open mind with every like new piece of technology or new social media site and just try and, again, like adapt it into a way that still makes sense from my perspective and my point of view.
There's two parts to it. One is it is enabling us all to create and produce much faster, much easier, much more economically, and therefore much more of it. But that means there's more opportunities for the best of it to be produced as well.
That's true.
And then at the other end, technology is enabling us to have unprecedented levels of understanding about who's out there, what interests them, motivates them, excites them, what they're doing, how they're responding to anything that we put out this minute. The depth of understanding that technology is facilitating is informing us better as we start the process of creating and measure what we're doing.
The part of tech I'm so excited about is where it goes next, right? So there's lots of dabbling in this space of virtual reality and augmented reality and mixed media and where it will take the consumption and how we as consumers consume our media in the future. Amazing. Will continue to change. And if you go over to the exhibitor space at Shape, you can walk through and see, you know, now I can create virtual reality in my pocket, right? I don't have to have the 360 camera. It's evolving so fast and it's going to involve what our friends are doing from full screen. It's becoming easier to create these new forms and ways to consume and experience media events, even live events, right? If you can do virtual reality in real time.
I know, amazing.
And stitch that, right? All of a sudden, hey, I can sell interesting seats to concerts for all of those that are virtually at home.
Yes, when the tickets sell out in 8 minutes for the iHeart Festival, we can go bigger.
You got it.
Yeah, I love that. And more tickets. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think it's amazing, right? You can start thinking about where you're already projecting, creating content at home tonight and having a million people follow that and have access to that on their phone or on their laptop. Imagine when you can start actually like putting content on people's clothing, having your followers wearing some of your content and your show. Is there a technology that excites you guys most? What's coming next? Anything you're intrigued about?
The idea of virtual reality and where that can go, especially for giving people access and allowing a lot of people, especially in my field, who are not comfortable with social interaction, aren't comfortable with dating, or maybe have such extreme anxiety issues where they don't feel good leaving the house, as a form of giving you practice in a safe space and allowing you to press stop whenever you're uncomfortable. So I'm really excited about that field for where it can go for, especially for people who have intimacy barriers.
I did some years in the technology business, and I've always seen the things that succeed are where there's an intersection of humanity and human need, and then technology is helping solve a problem versus technology for the sake of technology. And it's cool, and we can see stuff here, and we can access it that way, and we can move around in an environment, but actually helping people figure out how to communicate together. You know, that's going to be interesting when we're doing that in our clothing, in our glasses, and our.
I think augmented will take off really in earnest before virtual reality. Got to get through the motion sickness first, right, on virtual, right? That will all come together. But augmented, leaning into what you're saying, Gail, from an education standpoint, where you can hold up your device over a physical presence and see what that space looked like 40 years ago from an education standpoint. It adds and enhances to the experience that, you know, you used to would have done in a textbook or you would have read in two-dimensional. That then sits with you longer and invades your memory longer. And so those experiences, whether it starts with education or becomes purely for a new form of entertainment, feels like that's the next that will be conquered.
Yeah, I think in the education space, I think it's phenomenal. In the analog world, the simple power of going to a museum, right? A museum of natural history and seeing dinosaurs, right, up close is so different than reading in a textbook about them. The ability to actually go explore and splice together some of the footage we have now about modern history will be just transformative.
I'm really interested in and excited by a much more simple thing, which is just the use of voice. As the quality of the learning of these machines becomes so good, how many different interactions and things that we currently have that are either really awful or take a lot of time will just speed up and become fantastic.
Yeah, it is so empowering that that content exists and the power once you get it, but the ability to
just ask for it by just saying it as opposed to typing something in. I mean, that just makes such a difference.
Yeah,
I was talking
to
somebody the other day who's got young kids. When you have young kids, they're always asking you questions and they're always particularly saying why. And he said,
and you're Googling.
Well, but he said his kids stopped asking him. They now ask Alexa or Google or whatever it is, the same questions that they used to, and they're getting much better answers probably in his case. But it means they're able to do much more of it. That's what I think the interesting thing about a lot of technological advances, it enables us to do much more of the things that we like and value and get.
And to find those things,
and music,
right, that you didn't
music,
have exposure
I'm amazed at how much more music people are listening to as it has become so much easier to find music you want.
Yeah, the accessibility is amazing. You know, having grown up with the era of search and how empowering it was when you could type something into a white box and get a list of all these results. And now you actually don't even have to go through that list of results. And, you know, we're getting so close to where you can just ask that question and be there.
Yeah.
Right? And actually be in a moment, in a historical moment, in a setting and exploring it on your own, which is going to be pretty exciting.
And relating technology to social media, something that really sticks out to me as an incredible advancement is just how easily I'm able to get in contact with someone who lives in Russia. I have met YouTubers.
Controversial country you picked, yes.
Well, yes. I just mean in general, like I have met so many different YouTubers. I have a friend who lives there. But neither here nor there.
No.
I've just met so many different social media people just using the power of Twitter and the advancements in like FaceTime and how easy it is to get in contact with someone through so many different avenues, I feel like is really bringing people together. And so that's an exciting space for me to watch as a social media creator and how that evolves further.
Building a global audience.
Exactly. Right?
From like your living room. It's pretty amazing. Remember what it used to take to reach a global audience? How many months of planning? How many briefs? How many edits? So, yeah. That's
pretty. Do you think there's a cap on social that's coming?
What sort of cap?
That the overconsumption or constant consumption we as humans, do you think we'll reach a cap? Thinking in particular of your generation and your age who are natives to this, who have grown up with it, probably can't consider the world without it. But at any point, is it overpowered or you're foreseeing that there will be a pullback from it?
Sure. I think that's a really interesting question. I think to kind of answer it twofold, one, talent wins out. The people, the social media influencers who have a point of view or have something they want to say, those are the ones who hold on to their audience and they retain that relationship, whether it's still on YouTube, whether it's on Instagram, whether they have a television show. The people that really value it as a craft are the ones who stick around ultimately. In terms of just kids consuming so much social media, I think it will reach a point where there's a bit of a pullback. And I think we've even seen that, I don't know, speaking personally, like with Instagram, 2 years ago it was easier to just gain followers quickly. And now it's a little harder because the kids that are on Instagram, they have the people they follow. They did it already, curated their choices, timeline. Yeah. They know what they want to see. They see it. They're enjoying that content. And they're sort of set in that vein. So I think there will be a shift. And I don't know about fully a cap, but I think a bit of a pullback in terms of just how much content is posted and consumed.
I think it's been interesting to see the walls break down between being always connected and being productive. Those were things we used to parse into different parts of our lives. This next generation, millennials and Gen Z, it just sort of weaves seamlessly through their lives with the access that you have. Your phone is always there. You can always be in contact with your friends and your family and people in Russia and your followers. At the same time, you can be in a meeting and you can be having a conversation. And I wonder where that takes us as a society. Because I think in the marketing side of the business, right, we're in an attention economy and we're always vying for that attention, which is increasingly divided. How do you guys think about solving for that?
Talent will out. Exactly what we said. Mm-hmm. You've got to earn it. You've got to create something that is worth somebody spending their time with you rather than any of the other things that they could do. And I heard a wonderful phrase for that, which is you used to just compete with what else was in the break. Now you're competing with everything that's ever been created.
Yeah. When you look at marketing and millennials, right, which was that generation that started changing the way we were thinking about how we communicate and generation with the choice to ignore you. And particularly in the States, we have the most educated generation in the history of human beings.
Yeah.
And as marketers, we've said, hey, I'm going to create 15 seconds, but if you can only handle 8, that's cool. Right? And what we're seeing is there's 3-hour podcasts that are crushing. Documentaries are back in vogue. And I think we're starting to learn that and, you know, some of the best advertising respects that.
There's no right answer to how long or short should it be. I mean,
exactly.
As long as it's interesting is as long as it should be.
Yeah.
And in some cases, that isn't very long. In other cases, it can be hours.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to be a challenge in the economy of advertising and media? How do you account for this might be a 3-minute piece, this could be told in 15 seconds?
Well, it's not about how long it can be told. It's about how long somebody's going to give you for it, and how interesting you can make it. You're not going to have as much time before they're able to make that decision. So you're going to have to work harder at getting them in early. But this isn't new. It's been true of print, bizarrely, advertising forever.
Mm.
When you turn a page, your eyes have to decide whether you're going to stick on that ad, read the headline, look at the picture, read the copy, or not in milliseconds.
Mm.
It's just now becoming true of video and audio.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the platforms by which it gets consumed and how advertising is sold, all of that is going to go through a dramatic change. Having formats of 15s or 30s.
Yeah.
We create content that lives on DTV Now that is a minute in length for you to watch because it is not linear. It's video on demand, and you can now have these different lengths. And again, the content being worthy of you watching for that period of time. So the advertising will follow on that in terms of it now changing what different types of.
Could you buy it based on the level of engagement that you can earn with the audience? So as a media company, right, it's scary to say, hey, take 8 minutes, go crazy, right? But if it's great.
Well, I'd argue that it's in everybody's interest to do exactly that.
Yeah.
I'd argue it's in the viewers or listeners' interests. It's certainly in the advertiser's interests. And if it's in both of those, it should be in the public's interests as well.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating question. I was watching a bunch of your content this week, both of you. I had to sit through quite a few pre-roll advertisements that you probably don't know which ones I saw or why I saw them or what was running before I watched your content. How do you feel about that?
In terms of not, I didn't select the ad or?
Yeah, that there's advertising running in front of the content that you're creating or in between the content that you're creating. Do you feel good about
it?
Do you
feel really, really good about it?
Yeah.
The more ads.
Keeps the servers running at YouTube full screen. Yeah.
The more ads, the more cool videos I can make and the more I can put into the craft. Any TV show, if it's doing super well, then it can do cooler things and do greater things and have many more episodes. And it's the same with YouTube content.
Yeah, I think that the attitude definitely has changed. And in terms of length of time, I think what's important to note, especially for creators, that their shift happened recently where it used to be about how much of the video somebody watched, and now it's how long they watched. So if you have a 3-minute video that somebody watched in 100%, the algorithm prefers a 3-hour video that somebody watched for 10 minutes. And so that's a bit of a shift for us as well, too, where making fast content is great and you want to keep people's attention, but the longer you can keep people on your platform, the more that the algorithm praises you. And I think that's also been a shift too, because maybe 3 years ago, it was all about shares. Yeah. That was in everyone's mind of how you get something to go. And now it's like if the Wizard of Oz of the algorithm picks you, that's when things get great for you. It's a constant balance, but yes, I mean, in advertisers, yes, please, and more. If you know anybody who does that, yes, please, and more.
Yes, next episode, creativity and algorithm.
Yes.
Totally. Back to the original topic here, right? Engineering and creativity and engineering creativity, this intersection, right? Just hearing you being able to talk about algorithms and how they're having an impact on your audience and who you get to communicate to and how often. Do you feel like we're becoming engineers, or to succeed as creators, we need to become engineers? Or data scientists?
I think on some level, if you're doing social media and you're not just, you know, in front of the camera, if you're sort of running your whole entertainment platform, then absolutely. Like if you don't have the tools to market yourself effectively, then I think that there's not really much you can do other than like hope for the best. So I think it is a matter of on some level at least, or whether you're working with your management or working with your YouTube network, figuring out like, how do I sell myself and how do I get people interested in what I genuinely want to say?
You have to be a creator and you have to be a marketer and you have to be a data scientist and you have to understand the platforms and the technology. It's a lot. I think that's why you guys are doing the Shape Conference and trying to help creators bring some of the expertise
it's a perfect
together.
Example. Yeah. I'll tell you, the creators we work with at AT&T, we're always looking for what we call multi-hyphenates.
Mm-hmm.
Talent that isn't just making YouTube videos, but they have all of these other interests, and that could lean into the tech side of it. That could lean into the data science part of it. And where that's not necessarily a strength, those are resources we can bring to the table as part of that collaboration to help with that.
What do you think you'd be doing if you were starting out today in a world of creators and access and content? Do you think you'd take a different path?
I don't.
No.
Actually, I think about that a lot every now and again.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have taken a different path because I didn't really take a path. I kind of fell into it.
Fair enough.
So I think I'd probably fall into it again today.
Yeah. So far. Really worked out.
Career advice.
I mean, I really didn't know what I was doing. And I figure a lot of people don't when they start, and that's fine.
You guys were saying it. Find other creative people who get you and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to undergrad at Syracuse for musical theater.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I went to law school. And let's just be honest, attorneys are closet thespians. They all want to be in the front of a courtroom performing the litigation, right? So I think I would have fallen into this creator camp if I could have had access to...
If you could see the path.
Yeah, what is available now. Then for me, it was all about live performance. Right. Give me Broadway.
Oh, there you go.
So
performing litigation live on Broadway.
That's right.
We can make that happen.
So creator.
How about you guys?
Sure.
You've been at this for what, a few years?
Yes. Yeah?
Would you do something differently if you were starting today?
I think if I were starting today, the content I would have ended up making would be different, but I think it would have sort of my same like perspective and point of view on things. I feel like the stuff that I make on my YouTube channel is relatively reflective of what was popular in the time I started and has sort of warped and shifted so it fits today. But I think if I were just starting out and I didn't know that sort of old school stuff, I would probably end up making different types of videos.
Old school from 5 years ago?
Old school from 5 years ago. Yeah. And I mean, in YouTube time, that's like half, 50% of the platform ago.
Yeah. Amazing.
If I were starting again today and I didn't care about my specialty mattress and my specialties that I have in the morning, and I was just like, I want to go and just gun at this, I would move 10 of my friends into a place. Oh. And I'd be like, because at the end of the day, at this point, as a creator, you're competing with NBC. I'm competing with Stephen Colbert, who puts out 5 videos a day, who has a team of 40, and there's just one of me. So I would be like, yo, we're all going to move into this shaggy-ass place together, and we're going to put out 5 videos a day. We're going to do live for an hour a day. We're going to rotate this responsibility. At the end of it all, I'm going to sell this major, massive company to somebody else, and then go get my specialty mattress and my teas. But I think that I would approach it from more of a standpoint of, it isn't every man for itself. And at this point where, again, you're competing with every piece of content ever made. Mm. As an individual, it's very difficult. What do you think? You want to move in with me? Let's start again.
Oh, I like this. I like where this is going. Now, I saw a lot of your videos. I think it's so true of the creator culture and a little bit of what's happening over on the studio lot next door, right? There's a lot of people coming together to help one another create and sort of bringing these different disciplines together. You guys create a lot of content with friends and, I guess, friends that you make as you travel through this world.
I'm intrigued as you obviously know your audience, but it's constantly changing. What you do changes subtly from video to video, but then over time quite dramatically. Are you actually aware of the changes you're making, or are you changing them intuitively based on what you're seeing, reading, and feeling at the time?
For me, it's a little bit of both. I grew up on YouTube. Yeah. So my shift in the last 5 years was a lot of my teen years, and I think everyone changes significantly in that time. So it sort of has shifted with me growing up just naturally, because like I'm not the same person I was at 16. Also, it has been a conscious shift of, now that I am this different person who's evolved in various ways, how do I make that fit into the brand while still allowing myself to grow? So I think it's both twofold. And I think having at least some sort of, I don't know if separation's the right word, but awareness of my brand online versus my identity as a person, and finding the parts of my identity that I'm interested in sharing, that I'm willing to highlight, and that I'm willing to put out there, and making sure I'm comfortable with where that line lives and where that divide is. Mm.
Yeah, you're right. I like your 18th birthday video where you decided to come out to your followers in the world. What got you to that decision? Was that a personal decision? Was that your followers and your community telling you to go there?
Well, they didn't know. But yeah. I've made a video every year since I was 15, like 15 tips for 15 years. And it's the most like honest that I am on the internet, just because a lot of what I do is comedic and satire. And that's the world I like to live in. So every year that video is so important to me. And it's just something that I really value and like I plan for. And that year of my life, had so much of it had been me going on like that journey within myself. And I just knew that there was no way to authentically communicate what I had actually learned in that year of my life without talking about my sexuality. So I sort of like mentioned it as one of the tips and then moved on, because it was just like a part of what had happened that year.
I spend a lot of time talking to musicians, and it's much safer probably sitting on this side of the table as a marketer than having to actually be your product and be your brand. And there's probably an insane pressure that comes with that and living your life, plus deciding what part of your life you're going to share and not share.
Yep, there is.
Yeah.
Thanks for noticing.
Yeah.
It's super hard.
Yeah. But how about you, Shannon? Is there a pressure?
Yeah, I would say one of the greatest things I did is study sex, love, and relationships for a living, because it's taught me so much about how important it is to stay changing. We have this weird dichotomy within us that we want comfort, but we also want spontaneity. We want what's routine, but we want something different. And you have to know that as an individual, not to take it personally, that if your audience has been coming for the same video week after week and then they don't come anymore, you can't be like, you guys hate me and I hate myself. I have to like, okay, what is a unique way that I can take the message that they've been enjoying, but shift it so it goes with what is trendy right now? And knowing that it's not a personal thing, I think has deeply helped me. And it allows me to really make an intimate bond with people, understanding what they need to feel loved and validated in our relationship. At the end of the day, that's what it is. Yeah, to your point, it's about making that oxytocin connection with somebody where they really do look to you as someone they know, understand, and who understands them, which is literally the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think the creative teams back at your office are thinking about that, moving the oxytocin through relationships?
They are, but they're not aware that they're thinking it.
Yeah. It's a little safer when you're sitting behind concepting versus actually being.
You're doing it with yourself, ultimately, always.
Mm-hmm. Any secrets and tips to success that you would share with other people? I'm sure there are going to be a ton of people listening going, I want to be Alexis. I want to be Shannon. What do I do?
I've always given the same piece of advice and no one wants to hear it because a lot of people when they're asking, like, how do I get started on social media? The sort of underlying question is, how do I get famous? How do I get followers? But if you want to make YouTube videos or be a YouTuber, anything really in life, make a YouTube video and then make another YouTube video and make another and make sure you like it and just try and make every video better than the last and make it a learning experience and collaborative and focus on creating something that you're proud of. And then from there, once you've sort of found your footing and your point of view and perspective and what you actually want to say, that's sort of the time to think, okay, how do I start getting my name out there? Maybe I do this collaboration. Maybe I do that. I think like fully make videos. If you want to be a YouTuber, make a video. If you want to be the best at karate in the whole world, start doing karate. You have to just do it. And then
practice helps.
Work from there.
To piggyback off that, I would say people have to really understand the difference between passion and talent. You can have a passion for music. It doesn't mean your talent is in singing. Your talent might be in writing or being the person behind the singer. In this every man for themselves industry or culture that we're in right now is a little dangerous because you can't have that much content. But if you know for a fact that your passion is video games, but maybe you're not the best at the commentary, but you know you're really good at graphics, contact a video gaming YouTuber and say, look, I have this skill. I want to join your team. And if people are able to identify that within themselves, we can create better content, bigger ideas. We can compete with the NBCs. But if everyone just wants to be Alexis and we run into a land that I think that's where we get to the place of doing pranks to try to get views or lighting yourself on fire to try and get views, where you just get to this extreme place where you're, I don't get why I'm not really like being seen. So let me go bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. Where it's no, you identified what you love, but just know what you're really good at within that.
Be excited about the fact that we live in a very specialized society. Not everyone has to be good at everything. I don't have to be able to make a table to like do my job. So I can do my job and I can do my part in working with other people. I think that's a great thing that you said.
I still love the metaphor of move in together and just bring that diverse skill set together. Yeah. You need the graphics person, right? Just as important. You need the data guy. Yeah. It's crazy important. How about you, Val? Any advice for people wanting to get into creating, marketing, advertising, media, technology,
have to
musical theater?
Right. Hey, stick with the hustle. I walk into my office every day and imagine that I have to recreate this company every single day. And if you keep that hustle and that frame of reference, incubate, try new things, dabble in it. Yes, the business as usual marketing, the engine has to keep going. Mm-hmm. The opportunity to take risks is in that incubation. You try it, you nail it, you scale it. You try it, you nail it, you scale it. Just keep pounding that sidewalk and that pavement.
Yours?
Yes.
It's good.
It's daily because AT&T is reinventing itself every single day, and you have to have that framework. So keep the passion of the hustle.
I love AT&T.
I like the hustle.
Big fan.
High five.
That's it.
We do another podcast called Art of the Hustle.
Okay.
For entrepreneurs. That's exactly the metaphor. How about you, Andrew? Advice?
Yeah. I mean, I think it taps into something that's been said, which is you have to enjoy what you're doing, not depend on the result of it. You can cope with a lot of rejection if you like doing what you're doing. If all you're after is the approval, you're going to get very depressed very quickly.
Yes. Oxytocin. Yeah. This was, I think, an amazing episode. We have one final question we always ask our guests. What's your tagline?
Mine is, I just want to sell some carpet.
Marketing that matters. You heard it here.
I kind of gave it away. It's try it, nail it, scale it.
Yeah, I love it.
At the end of every single one of my videos, I say Zoll good, which is a pun on my last name and then good. But I think also it's sort of my attitude is it is all good. It's working from the positive places and like staying in that mindset of everything is good and how can we work with it? So it's all good.
I do. I own it. They love it. And it really is just, you know, live and die by your taste. In a world where there is so much content, I have to decide first that it's good. And then I'm going to assume you guys are all going to like it. Whether they is 5 people or 5 million, it has to start with me first owning it.
Hmm. amazing advice for everyone. Anything we didn't talk about? Anything you want to ask, share, say? It's your moment.
Your point about risk, I learned a wonderful lesson a few years ago from, of all things, a banker. And we haven't
talked about banking yet.
No. Well, we should all be more like bankers.
Was it to wear suspenders?
It wasn't.
Oh, just checking.
I already had that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
We had done a campaign for clients in Australia, National Australia Bank, a few years ago, which was called the Big Breakup. And the idea was that consumers thought the banks were all in cahoots with each other. So we publicly broke up with the other three banks on Valentine's Day. And it's not about us, it's about you. We're sick of you lying, you're cheating, all that. Yeah, it was really, really very successful. And I went to see the CEO of the bank and I said, you know, I just want to say congratulations on being so bold. And he looked at me and said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, publicly breaking up with the other banks was a pretty big stand to take. And he said, you're out of your mind. I'm a banker. I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to manage risk. And when your guys presented that to me, I mentally figured out what the maximum downside was, which was that we'd be laughed at for 3 weeks. I'd have some awkward moments at the golf club. But in 3 weeks, the story would have moved on. And on the basis that I could live with the downside, I went ahead with it. I wasn't being bold. I was just managing risk. And I think all too often, we make the mistake of not managing risk. We pursue certainty. The inevitable consequence of the pursuit of certainty is the average. Yeah, that's where you'll land if you pursue certainty. And managing risk doesn't have to be frightening. You just actually have to think of what the risks really are.
Yeah, and just get right with the worst case scenario.
Yeah, most often we're always trying to be bold, whereas if you just think about what the downside is, it probably isn't that big and you may as well go ahead.
Look, I want to micromanage, but that may be a better line than the carpet one.
That one hit.
I like this creative note too. That's spectacular. I totally agree. I've gotten to work with some of you, a lot of fabulous folks in advertising. A good friend, Rosemary Ryan, always says she would walk into the big pitch and the horrible meeting where you're presenting the bold, the risky ideas. And she would think about the worst possible thing in all of her life that could happen. And then if this meeting didn't go well or you didn't get this idea out into the world, it didn't compare at all to your worst case scenarios in life. I always took that lesson to heart there too.
What's your tagline?
What is my tagline? These days it's get heard, be loved. Get out there. Say what you're feeling, be honest with people, don't be afraid to tell some truth, and again, take the consequences and the risks that come with being honest and provocative in many cases. Awesome. Did you guys have a good time?
Great time.
Yeah? Yeah. I think we got another awesome episode of Tagline. So thank you all for joining us here in Burbank. Next time there will be more cocktailing. We'll do it later in the day.
Well, let's all go to 18 to Shape then.
There you go. I think there's an after party in your future. Yeah.
You've been listening to Tagline. We want to hear what you thought. Join the discussion on Twitter now by using the hashtag Tagline. Catch all of our episodes at iHeartRadio.com/tagline, in the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Audiation.